This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
We've all been watching the horrible story unfolding of the incredible loss of life in Haiti and the incredibly messy aftermath of trying to deal with that disaster. A lot of us have been asking ourselves, I think, why is it that it was such a huge disaster? Why was there so much devastation? One person who may be able to help us out with some of those answers is Archie Law, the CEO of ActionAid, and he joins me on the line now. Good morning, Archie.
Good morning, Doug.
So why was it such a big disaster? Why was there so much destruction?
I think, firstly, the strength of the earthquake itself, which is a massive earthquake. But, you know, you're not going to get the same reaction if an earthquake that size hit Melbourne or Sydney, for example, that you get in a country like Haiti, and particularly in a city like Port-au-Prince, where because of construction standards of housing, houses pretty much just collapse in on themselves, and the same with all buildings. And that's a direct response, or really a direct result of the fact that you're dealing with a very poor country, with a government that firstly doesn't have resources, but secondly isn't able to really enforce the right regulatory standards to be able to have safer housing, stronger housing in place.
So even if there was a building code, there's really no means of enforcing it.
That's right. And that's a major challenge faced by developing countries around the world if you had the code.
What about corruption as well, because Haiti used to be absolutely infamous for the level of corruption there, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, corruption to me is quite a relative concept in many ways, because, you know, we have corruption in Australia. It's just that, you know, we have, you know, a very robust, active civil society, very robust media. We have, obviously, government checks in place where we're able to balance all of this out. Whereas, yeah, countries like Haiti that don't have that robust civil society or media in particular, and also for the rule of law, so people aren't able to act with impunity. And they need to be three real priorities that come out of this as well, because, you know, without that, you don't end up with strong governance as opposed to strong government.
Mm. And I noticed one of the things you said was that ActionAid isn't interested in just alleviating poverty, you're interested in eliminating poverty. Now, it seems that in the past that's not been possible in Haiti. Do you think this gives you an opportunity in that sense?
Yeah, there's certainly an opportunity in Haiti now. And things need to begin to change now, because, I mean, at the root causes of poverty, from all the work that we've done as ActionAid over the last, you know, nearly 40 years, really comes down to the role of the state in being able to fulfil, protect and respect people's human rights. And that's at the core of the issue. And that's why we're saying that government needs to be in the middle of decision-making on what happens in the response to this earthquake. It can't be driven by outside interests like the US particularly and other governments. And the people of Haiti need to be able to engage with their government as things go forward. Like the last thing we'd want is, you know, personally, my opinion, I think there needs to be camps established that are being established at the moment outside Port-au-Prince. You need to get people out and then be able to come back in when the reconstruction's completed. But people need to be consulted in this whole process.
Because I've been seeing a lot of things on television where people are coming up and saying, we don't know what's happening. Nobody's talking to us. Nobody's telling us what's happening. We don't know if help's on the way or not.
Exactly, and that's alarming from the humanitarian perspective, but it's also alarming in terms of the recovery, because, I mean, we've seen this in other countries, with a tsunami in Sri Lanka, for example, where communities that have spent generations on existing out of what they can catch from the sea as far as fishing, and then all of a sudden they've been moved off a beach for safety reasons, and in their place comes a hotel resorts. I mean, you could see something similar happening in Port-au-Prince. I mean, particularly when you've got weaknesses in land titling.
That's development, you know? That's development. That's good for a country, isn't it? Or so we're told.
Well, it is, according to some. Yeah, I mean, if a model continues to break, of course you keep working it.
Because I've been seeing a lot of things on various rather outspoken websites, for example, claiming that the US is using this opportunity as a kind of invasion of Haiti. Meanwhile, standing boats offshore preventing people from escaping from the island.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, but I think there are legitimate concerns as far as who is the US military reporting to in Haiti. That to me is the concern, because
are they reporting to anybody in Haiti?
Well, that's not clear, because really, when it comes down to it, the government of Haiti is in charge. It has been elected by the people of Haiti. At the same time, it's invited the United Nations to assist with a humanitarian effort, which puts the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, from the UN in charge of that effort. And every organisation, every actor should be reporting into OCHA on the humanitarian effort. Of course, that's not happening in reality when it comes to US military, that they're coordinating their efforts rather than coming under the coordination of. And, there is a difference.
Isn't there the danger then that there's going to be duplication? People getting in each other's way if it's not all going through one central point?
Yeah, and it's, to be honest, it's almost unavoidable in this particular situation. I mean, we learn lessons out of every major disaster that we've responded to, and coordination is something that it comes up every time as far as things need to be better coordinated. But the cold facts of it are that when you have something like an earthquake hit, it particularly, and I say this situation because when there's such a huge amount of people in such a limited geographical area that have been affected by a disaster, it's almost unavoidable that there will be some crossovers. But, there's a cluster system set up that all of the NGOs, including ActionAid, are working in under the coordination of the UN. So there's a cluster for health, cluster for protection, cluster for food, water, etc. And there's also an NGO coordination mechanism for NGOs alone. So it certainly won't be for lack of goodwill or lack of effort.
But you mentioned the tsunami. There's been, in the long term, some criticism of an awful lot of money has gone in there, but there hasn't been that much to show for it, relatively speaking. Is that a danger here too?
Yeah, I think there has been a lot to show for the contributions that have been made to the tsunami. I think Aceh in particular, I mean, Aceh in many ways has been an incredible success. I mean, the fact that the disaster was really the catalyst for resolving the conflict in Aceh in many ways is getting people to the table, and then that province has gone forward. I think as far as a danger, again, it comes back to that core issue of people needing to be involved in all decisions that are made about them and having a full voice, particularly the poor, particularly women.
Yeah, and that's not happening at the moment, as far as you can see.
It is happening in pockets of areas, but it's not systematic. I think this is a problem with large-scale relief operations as well. One of the challenges where it's a challenge enough to be able to access people who are suffering, because you have to, firstly, when the airport's been destroyed, the port's not working, you can't use the roads, how do you actually get in there? That's a monumental challenge in itself, and something that the media have really glossed over rather than focusing the story on where's the aid. And it's like, look, folks, can we get back to actually the problems that are being dealt with, because they're massive?
Yeah.
But I personally don't see it as a challenge. I think all money is responsibly spent by responsible agencies.
Right. Now, you mentioned there the communication difficulties in the broad sense of it's really hard to get from A to B, it's hard to get stuff in there. presumably, A, there wasn't a lot of infrastructure communications-wise in place in the beginning, and B, what little there was has probably been badly damaged now. So actually coordinating this whole thing and actually getting people to where they need to be is a monumental task, isn't it?
It is. It's a huge challenge in this sort of situation. And I think, I mean, just previous discussions, actually, I had last night, for example, on where Talkback Radio, a caller said, well, why do you always say unprecedented? And I think that's a good point, because often there's the tendency, here comes another unprecedented disaster. But I think something like Haiti, you're seeing now potentially the same amount of people who died in the tsunami dying in one city almost.
Yeah.
We haven't had to deal with that sort of situation before. So there are a huge amount of challenges. But at the same time, there's also, you know, we've got some of our best people in there now. So do all the other NGOs. The UN has some of its best people in there. And, you know, there is an opportunity to build back better in Haiti, and it needs to be grasped.
Are things beginning to get under control out there now?
I think, you know, aid is beginning to move as far as food, water, shelter, essential medical services. You know, I know that, you know, we've been able to reach, you know, 10,000 people so far out of the 20,000 that we're looking at providing assistance to in Port-au-Prince. So, and other organisations are the same. I think, like, my experience, you know, working with the UN on conflicts and disasters, this sort of situation typically took 7 to 10 days to really get going, and we're now just over 2 weeks. And given the particular complexities of Haiti and Port-au-Prince and the situation, I think, you know, now is around the time that you see real movement with aid moving.
Yeah, and of course you've had the aftershocks to cope with as well, which can't have helped.
No, that's right. I mean, that just adds an additional level of stress. I mean, firstly, you know, the damage from aftershocks and, you know, loss of life that, you know, may have happened under the ground. I mean, who knows who's under the rubble, firstly.
Yeah.
But secondly, yeah, it takes time.
Right, now, I'm broadening the discussion out a little bit, I notice in your material that about ActionAid, you stress that worldwide, something like 7 out of 10 people who are going hungry are women.
Yeah.
And you see women as like a key to overcoming poverty. Can you give us a bit more on that? Why are women so important?
Women are important because women are really the responsible members of the family in many developing countries. We look firstly at women in, say, this sort of situation. Women are the best members of a family to deliver humanitarian assistance through, because you can pretty much be assured that it's going to go where it's intended to go, as far as to the whole family, particularly children.
Yeah.
Whereas men, it's a lot less reliable. But secondly, see, this is a great opportunity, this sort of opportunities for women to build on the gains as far as a sense of self-worth and dignity that have been built on established over the last 10 years in a lot of the work that's been going on. Things become a free-for-all as far as distributions and things like that, those gains are pretty much washed away.
Mm.
But, I mean, some of the statistics as far as the whole situation with women are really quite, you know, overwhelming. You know, when you look at the fact that when it comes to agriculture, for example, women are growing, you know, 60-70% of the developing world's food as smallholder farmers, but own about 1% of the land.
Mm.
Yeah, there is just a massive inequality across the globe, and massive injustice.
Yes. Also, we've seen a lot of stories about how women thrive when they can set up small businesses. They get microloans and the like. Are you involved in that?
Exactly. I mean, again, you know, women, if they're given the opportunities, everything says that they'll fully grasp the opportunities. And it is about, it's a basic equality issue and a justice issue. And particularly for poor women who don't have that sort of access to microcredit, any opportunities that women can be given to build on their own coping mechanisms can yield really quite amazing results.
So what are you looking to put into place in Haiti to help the rebuilding? Your organization specifically, I mean, what differentiates you, you know, from the other aid agencies, I suppose is what I'm asking.
The approach we're using is to put the poor and to put women in front from day one. At the moment, two of the big concerns that we're really pushing are the whole issue of sexual exploitation and abuse. There are guidelines in place that through the UN on how to deal with this, and we're ensuring that those guidelines are really integrated into our programming. Like sexual violence is a huge issue, particularly rape, and that's something where women's coping mechanisms need to be built on. It doesn't need, you know, 10,000 American troops coming in to protect a refugee camp. You know, what it does need is if women need to go out of the safe area, community area at night to collect firewood, for example, you know, can some of the men from that community actually escort women, or can groups of women go rather than one woman going outside? Sometimes this is relatively simple, but that leads into our longer-term recovery strategy, where women's rights will be at the core of everything that goes on in Action Aid in Haiti. It always has been, and it always will be. Women need to have their voices heard. They need to have a quality of opportunity to health care. Women, girls in particular, need to have access to education. So that's the focus of where we're going into the medium term.
Right. You mentioned healthcare there. One other thing I wanted to ask you about before I let you go. HIV/AIDS in Haiti. What's the situation like as regards HIV/AIDS there?
Yeah, no. I mean, HIV/AIDS is always an issue that we're dealing with in countries like Haiti. Again, it comes back into the core of putting people in charge of their own destinies, making sure that people have access to information about prevention and transmission, also ensuring that communities have access to the right medical services and the right treatment to be able to respond to HIV/AIDS. So that again, that ties in very closely with the women's rights strategy as well.
Yeah.
But of course,
I kind of thought it would.
Yeah. The two are really linked up very, very closely.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Archie. If people want to know more about ActionAid or they want to donate to you, what's your website?
It's actionaid.org.au.
Right. And they can make donations online, etc.?
Yep, that'd be terrific.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Archie, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks, Doug. Good to talk to you.
You too. That was Archie Law there, the CEO of ActionAid and drummer with the Hoxton Creepers. What a lovely double career. And as you say, as he just heard him say, they've got a focus on helping women in particular, and that also relates, of course, to the HIV/AIDS strategy. So, it's good to get a picture of what's going on there and to know that somebody's taking that kind of action.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.